Hello and welcome back to the Mets Fix podcast. I am Blake Zeff. He is Jeffrey JB Ballone. Our friend Peter Kaufman is on vacation in undisclosed location. Jeff, let's get right to it. This is a really interesting time as a Mets fan because we've been through the peaks and valleys already. It hasn't even been a month. And here we are. We had an 0-5 start. We had a 12-3 run. Now we've had a 3-3 road trip, which you kind of have to be fine with, honestly. Yep. These are hard trips to do. We caught the Dodgers at the right time. I think it's safe to say I was glad that the Mets were able to salvage that last game of the San Francisco series. You would have a bad taste in your mouth, I think, if you got swept. And I know people will say, well, it was a bullpen game for the Giants. But as you noted in the newsletter, you could easily have seen the Mets getting crushed by some no-name, you know, Giants pitcher. So I was glad that they did that. And it looks like Francisco Lindor is coming alive. The question that I want to get to right away, though, is we keep saying it, and it feels like the bill may be coming due on the starting rotation. It feels like the walks are getting a little bit out of control. The lack of length is something that we have been harping on for weeks and weeks, because as good as the bullpen's been, you just cannot continue to ask them to keep doing this. I mean, you can't keep DFAing Michael Tonkin so many times, right? So let me just throw it to you. How are you feeling about the state of the starting rotation? Because I am going to say I am worried about it. I'm thrilled that the team is 13-11. I am worried about the state of the starting pitching until Kodai Senga gets back, and even when he does.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like a house of cards, right? I mean, even yesterday with Manaea, it's like, what do you know, only giving up the one run, right? I mean, and it felt like every single inning, they're in trouble. And it's funny because I was looking at it, I thought that the Mets would surely lead the league with their starters for left on base percentage, but they actually don't. They're somehow like middle of the road, which suggests, you know, they've been getting double plays and whatnot, but it just seems like, yeah, it's teetering. And it's not one of those things like, for instance, with, you know, even Blake Snell, who was scratched, or Yamamoto, I saw he pitched well today, where they weren't doing, you know, they haven't been doing well early, but they're guys with dominant stuff that, you know, okay, you know, they're figuring something out, eventually come around. It feels like this is kind of who these guys are. So it's the opposite. You're not thinking like, okay, they correct one or two things and now they'll clean that up. It feels like if they get, you know, a little less luck, maybe even on balls put in play, suddenly, you know, when it's first and second on two walks and they get out of it right now, well, suddenly, no, that's a three-run inning. So it's a concern. The length, like you say, the bullpen, I mean, is Reed Garrett going to finish with 20 wins? I mean,
yes.
I mean, that's been an amazing story, but you know, you can't keep going to the bullpen as much as they have. So no, I agree with what you said, but I think the exciting part, and we wrote about this week, is Christian Scott. You know, if he could figure out how to keep the ball in the ballpark, like, you know, everyone sees the big strikeouts. He does have a home run problem. He's given up one in each of his five starts. That's scary against AAA hitting, right?
Well, it feels a little Scherzer-esque, right? Like, even Max Scherzer at his prime, it was a lot of strikeouts. He was always prone to the long ball. And so the question is, can you contain the number of them and when they're in the right, you know, situation and all that? But I think we're going to see Scott sooner than later. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot more to prove. And as we've been saying, the depth is just already so thin.
Yeah, so if you add him and Senga, well, now suddenly 40% of your rotation is turned over. And then now if you're getting from, you know, a 3-4-5 starter, what we've seen, you can definitely live with that. It's just the fact that right now they're not getting those days where the stopper, so to speak, comes out. And I know nowadays they're not going to give you 8 innings, but even though we saw against the Mets that happened recently, you know, at least like a 7-inning game, you know, just to save the bullpen would be nice.
A 6 would be nice. I mean, you've kind of hit on a key point here, which is you kind of feel like you have a chance any day that any of these pitchers are going, but there's not a stopper that you're looking forward to where, you know, let's just get around. We'll get back to, what is it, Quintana? Do you feel like once the rotation turns around and you get to Quintana, okay, I can breathe. I know. I mean, it's just so odd for Mets fans, because we're so used to disappointment. But one thing we are on the positive side used to is great pitching. And it always felt like there was at least one, sometimes two, sometimes three really strong guys in the front end of that rotation that you just felt like, all right, if we can just get a couple of runs tonight, we're going to be fine. These games all feel like you're going to have to scrape and get those runs. So that's You know, that's the challenge. You're right. Until we don't know what we're going to get from Scott, you don't really know what you're going to get from Senga coming off of an injury.
Yeah.
So that's really the main thing to look for.
And not necessarily length with those guys too, right? Like, you know, when Senga comes back, he's going to be, you know, limited at first, and Scott, they're not going to stretch him out. So yeah, they give you two guys to get excited about, but not necessarily two guys that solve that problem. So yeah, this bullpen, it's going to be, you know, we got to hope that, you know, Stern's magic of finding these no names that are doing the job, you know, keeps up.
Do you expect that Michael Tonkin will be on the Mets again this season?
Well, I saw it today. Actually, he's claimed by the Yankees. So good for him that he got to stay within New York. So, you know, good for him. But, you know, I wrote about this in a newsletter. It's like, this is designed to help players, right? To say, you're not going to be stuck on some team's AAA squad when you could be on an active roster. But you'd have to think he would prefer that this wasn't a case when you're out of options that you have to clear waiver, have to be put on waivers. You know, you'd rather just be an up and down guy. Yeah, just go for a week in AAA and come back up. I guess it'd have to be a minimum amount of days, but you get the point. It's just unfortunate side of how it works now.
Yeah, I mean, he's been on three teams in 4 weeks, and it's actually four if you count the two different Mets stints. I mean, that's... Yep. That's a lot. All right. So we talked about pitching. Let's now move over to the offense. A lot of storylines to follow here. Some of them are good. Some of them are a little worrying. And I'm going to start with the one that is worrying me. And that it seems like Brett Beatty has come back down to earth, and not just come back down to earth, maybe below earth, if that is an expression, because you look at his OPS, we're looking at a 600 OPS guy now. And that is consistent with where he's been the last season and season and a half. The question becomes, at a certain point, is this who Brett Beatty is? Is he a legit major league third baseman?
No, I think it's a legitimate question. But I think they want to give him this large sample of at-bats to tell them. And I know you could say, okay, well, you start adding it together from last season, but you know, it's helped that I know they've slid down a little bit, but it's helped that they recovered from that 0-5 start, and it doesn't feel like dire right now that if you're riding that bat, and then obviously with JD Martinez coming back, you hope that boosts the offense. But I just think it's clear they've come this far. I don't think they're going to say, okay, you know, now it's already Vientos' turn. I think this means they're riding this out at least until June. And then that question becomes a real question of, you know, you have, it's not like you don't have someone else. Right. So it'd be one thing if you're saying, okay, this is our one position. We have a kid. We're all in on him. And if it wasn't him, it would just be some like washed up, you know, it'd be Joey Wendell. It's like, no, like you have another kid whose development you have to consider in Vientos. So that's why I don't think you can go forever, but I think they're going to go longer than, you know, the end of April.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that about Vientos, because JD Martinez coming back means that that's another avenue that Vientos does not have open to him,
right?
Mark Vientos is not going to be the DH. If it was ever going to happen, it would have been the past month. Now that JD Martinez is there, barring an injury, that is a foreclosed option for Mark Vientos. So for Mark Vientos to have any hope or any path on this club, it's going to be a third base. And you're right, mm-hmm. They have to consider his development too. Now, I have not been following his defensive progress mm-hmm. in minor leagues. That does seem to be the part of his game that maybe they're most concerned about, but you have to expect, like you said, by June, if Brett Beatty is still hovering around 600, you know, with his OPS, I love that he's smiling. I root for him. I like him. I think yep. The fielding has been better. You're right. It hasn't been a disaster overall. The team is doing fine, but I think at that point, if after, you know, almost half a season, he's still kind of at the 600 OPS mark, they gotta look at what they have with Vientos.
Yeah. And I guess one last point on that. I mean, we'll see. JD Martinez, he could come and light the world on fire, but it does make you think that, you know, we knew they needed offense, but to sign someone who is such a traditional DH, right? Like your point about now Vientos, it limits his path. The other, you know, I guess segueing into maybe our next point about roster decisions coming up, it's like, you know, now it limits even someone like Tyrone Taylor, like how he gets in the lineup. And it seems like every time he's in the lineup, something good happens. It, you know, Marte playing DH. I mean, obviously he's been hitting. I think he's got 4 or 5 games at DH, which you would think helps him at his age. When you lose that, you know, DJ Stewart, right? Like when you lose that, when we're now pretty much you don't have another spot to play these guys unless they take a position in the field. I don't know. I wonder if that kind of impacts the mix a little more than people give credit to.
I totally agree. I think Mendoza has done largely a good job in general. And I think in this particular case, he said that when JD Martinez comes back, he said, I got to rest this guy. I can't just expect him to come in. And it's funny, we think about it. Well, what is he needing rest for? He's just taking four swings a day. But, you know, he is older and he got sore, as we know, before this. So Mendoza said, I'm going to be giving him rest. So I like that. But you're right. Unless he's giving him a lot of rest, the DJ Stewarts and Tyrone Taylors, Harrison Baders, there's only so much room for all these guys to play. And it really is going to limit how much we're going to see that cast of characters. But the other thing that Martinez coming up points to is a roster move. Someone's got to go if he comes. So who is the obvious culprit? I mean, is this a Zach Short, pretty obvious, easy decision? Or do you think it's more complicated than that?
Yeah, I think that because you are still going to try to play Tyrone Taylor as a fourth outfielder, it now makes it where with DJ Stewart, where does he play, right? Because he's either a corner outfielder or a DH. Well, you're not going to play him at DH because, you know, I guess technically you could have him pinch hit for Martinez because he's a lefty, right? But you probably aren't going to do that. And then if you're trying to give someone a day off in, you know, say Marte, you're not putting DJ Stewart out there. You're putting Tyrone Taylor. So then the only role that DJ Stewart plays now would be as a pinch hitter. And then you wouldn't have him out in the field. So I think because of that, and because he's got an option remaining, he becomes the easy choice, even though he deserves, based on his bat, a spot over someone like a Zach Short. But I think it does come down to those two. As much as Mets fans want it to be Joey Wendell, he's got $2 million guaranteed. I know with Cohen, you could say, what's that matter? I don't think they're going to go that route. You know, he started off poorly defensively, but we know he has the ability to give him something there. So I think it's Short or Stewart. Maybe because Short's off to a poor start with the bat, he's batting 111. Maybe they feel like they can sneak him through waivers and then keep him in organization. And then if you do make a later move with like a Wendell, now you can bring up Short. And you know, that's one thing I'm always curious is like how much of a feel teams have for that, right? Like you got to imagine they're talking to agents, they're looking at rosters. They have a better idea than you and me over who can we sneak through waivers. So sometimes if they decide, let's say, okay, we're going to option Stewart, it might be because they have a better idea than we do whether Short would sneak through. Not saying losing him is the biggest deal in the world, but long-winded answer, I guess it's got to be Stewart.
I think that if you're David Stearns, there's a pretty good case to be made that Zach Short can be snuck through waivers and much more so than Stewart. And the reason why is I think Zach Short's hitting 111. He does not have any history of major league success. He was not a highly touted prospect. Stewart has all those things. Stewart had a real period of success. It wasn't a very sustained one, but last year he had that month where he would kind of dazzled folks. And even this year he's had some big hits. Also, he was, I believe, a first round pick several years ago now at this point, but he had that pedigree there. So you can not imagine DJ Stewart passing through waivers without someone.
Well, remember, with him. Stewart, though, he has an option. So that's the other part, right?
That's true.
So they don't have to worry about that. So that's why it just makes it easier where you say,
yep.
But again, we're talking about, are we that concerned about losing Zach Short?
No, that's my point. I think that even if you lose him, it's fine.
Right.
No offense to him. It's a great story that he's a Kingston kid. Like, I love it all. But just from a pure, unemotional baseball standpoint, I don't think you care that much if you lose him. It's pretty replaceable depth. And I think there's a chance you don't lose him. I think he can kind of sneak through and then you bring him, you know, put him in the minors.
And maybe the argument you could have now is when Francisco Alvarez was healthy, how many guys are you with? So let's say you keep Stewart with the idea he's a pinch hitter. That's what he would be. When Francisco Alvarez was healthy, you could say, how many guys is he really going to even pinch hit for? Well, now you could say, all right, you might pinch hit him for, you know, whoever's catching at night. And I know that introduces like who becomes the third catcher. And that's something with Short as well. But I guess that is it. But I just feel like if you keep Stewart, independent of all the who can clear waivers or who can be optioned, you're really limiting how you could use him. If you didn't have Bader and Tyrone Taylor, the extra outfielder, and the fact McNeil could play a corner outfield spot, right, I would say, okay, you can sneak Stewart in outfield once in a while, maybe DH, and he finds the bats. There's just no there's no playing time for him other than a pinch hitter.
Yeah, and I think the idea is to give Marte some rest. He's getting older. I mean, look, let's talk about Marte for a second here. The early signs look like this guy might be back. And if this guy's back, that is a total conversation changer. This is the difference between a potentially a 5-win player and a 0-win player. If you look at the last two seasons before this year, that's a big deal. And, you know, I think part of the key to that is you're going to have to give him his rest. So, you know, you could say, well, okay, so you put in Tyrone Taylor. You don't need DJ Stewart for that. And that's true. But just talking strictly about Marte, are you bought in? Are you convinced that this guy is back? Or do you need to see a bigger sample before you're willing to say this is a different player than we saw last year?
No, not with him. Because I think it was clear, you know, he had the, you know, the strange injuries last year. I'd never heard of double groin surgery and all these things he's gone through. That does not sound pleasant. I mean, it's Starling Marte. If he's hitting, you know, like it's not like, okay, he's never proven it. Like we're talking about with Beatty. So you're wondering like, can he keep it up? We know this guy could hit. It was just a question of, is he healthy? Did he lose something? So, you know, I think, yes, you have to be excited about that. It's a strange situation with the lineup where, you know, the guys like Lindor who are struggling, you're not going to do anything different there, right? Obviously it's Francisco Lindor. And they're actually getting production from guys who maybe if they weren't playing well, would have opened up an opportunity. So in some ways that has also kind of frozen the roster, so to speak, because places you might've make, you know, you might've made a move, you know, you wouldn't because of that.
Yeah. The other thing with Marte to keep in mind is obviously he's just so proven great player, but he is 35 years old. So, you know, father time comes for all of us at some point or another. So that would be the other thing that I would want to look at and say, he does seem like he's back. He's such a dynamic player, but I want to give it a little bit more time just to see how sustainable this is. But let's talk about, you just mentioned Lindor. We've been getting a lot of questions from our viewers and our readers on this topic in particular, which is Lindor switch hitting.
Yep.
You know, we've been asked, does it make sense for him to not be a switch hitter? We talked about that last week. We have been asked, you know, just sort of how important that is to the lineup. What do you make of what you've seen from Lindor so far, and specifically the importance of him to the lineup as a switch hitter?
Yeah. And you know, yesterday is ironic how it worked out. So like you said, you know, Snell gets scratched and then it's like, okay, is some, you know, no name going to shut down the Mets? Well, the other thing it did is it made it where Lindor, instead of facing a lefty, so he would able to bat on a better side of the plate, he was facing a righty through all the relievers. And then he has his big breakout game, right? So it kind of worked out for him in that regard. I mean, over his career, he's proven obviously that he can hit from the left side of the plate. Mechanically, I mean, that's hard for any of us to see from afar. Obviously, there's something going on there. Sometimes you can look at the video and you could get an idea. I don't have any insight, I guess, particular to that to say, okay, he's doing something here that seems unfixable. But what I can say is that I think people discount what it does for the matchups for the other teams, meaning especially when you're facing relievers. It takes away different pitches when you're facing, you know, the heavy side of platoon. If you're facing a righty, so he's going to get a lot of lefty at bats. Well, that's a lot of righties when, and especially in this day and age where you got guys who like throw maybe two pitches, you're taking away that, you know, devastating sweeper or that slider, because when you're a lefty, you just have to throw that differently than when, if he was a right, you know, that's decided, I'm not going to switch hit. I'm going to be a righty against a righty. Well, now those pitches you're chasing. So while the stats look good, right, where you say, well, look how much better the stats are against him as a righty. Well, remember, because he's facing all lefties. If he suddenly was facing righties as a righty, and now you have to face their best out pitches, the stats are, his numbers are going to come down. And I think that's a piece people forget. You know, in looking at the difference in the numbers. That said, you know, he's obviously off to a dreadful start. I put in a newsletter today. It's amazing. The Mets are 9-3 in games he gets a hit. When he hits, you know, they win. The problem is he's not hitting a ton. But, you know, maybe his time with the Mets hasn't been, you know, obviously perfect, especially that first year, but he has hit, right? So I feel like you got to give
him silver slugger, you know, yes.
Yeah, right. Like you have to give him time here to come out of an early season slump.
Yeah, I mean, that stat that you put in the newsletter was really stark because not only was he, I think, 9-3 when the team 9-3 when he gets a hit, but 4-8 when he doesn't. I mean, that is such a big disparity, and it's a pretty small sample. And
yeah,
but I think it paints a bigger picture, which is as he goes, the Mets go. And I always felt that way about Alonso too. That's always kind of been the case. You know, you want to have a more balanced lineup where you don't have to just rely on a couple of guys. And that's been the case this year, as you've said. While some of the bigger names have struggled, McNeil, Lindor, Nimmo at times, you've gotten this amazing production from the Tyrone Taylors of the world, even Harrison Bader. So, you know, that's a good sign because just as sure as Harrison Bader and Tyrone Taylor are going to cool off, hopefully just as sure as that, McNeil and Lindor will start to find their stroke.
Yep, exactly.
And speaking of that, you know, speaking of the offense, there was a major blow with Francisco Alvarez going down. I think we should talk about that a little bit because I find it very, very visible as I'm watching these last couple of games, really on both sides of the game. I notice it on offense, obviously. You're not going to replace that dynamic bat, even though Alvarez really did cool off after a while. Mm-hmm. I just love that he stole a base. He runs hard. He forces the other team to have to pitch a certain way, and it affects certain decisions when he's at the plate. Omar Narvaez has been a decent hitter in his career, but he's also a double play machine and just not as menacing a threat as Alvarez. And also defensively, just is not framing. It's funny. You hear there's a lot of buzz about the way Alvarez frames pitches, and you start to take it for granted until you see the way someone else does it.
Right.
And watching Narvaez frame or not really frame certain borderline pitches, you really start to have that appreciation for Alvarez. And where I'm going with this is it was really reassuring to see Tomas Nido back. And, you know, look, I don't want to overstate it. He's not going to hit the cover off the ball either, but so solid back there defensively. This may be wrong, but just emotionally, maybe I think I feel more comfortable and prefer seeing Nido back there than Narvaez, even though Narvaez is the guy with the 2-year, $15 million contract. And Nido is the guy who no one else in the Major League Baseball wanted. And the Mets, you know, had stashed away in the minors. Am I crazy?
No. And we've talked about the money the Mets have spent on catchers over the years, and it's been a problem. But yeah, look, nobody knew that Francisco Alvarez at his age, I mean, really, it's extremely rare for, thinking back to last year, a 21-year-old catcher to play as many games as he did and to do as well as he did. And the same thing being 22. So at the time when they signed Narvaez, they're thinking, we need some sort of insurance that if Alvarez just can't handle the majors at all, now, you know, we have that extra backstop. Independent of that, though, now knowing what Alvarez is, it just seems wasteful, right? Because it, like you said, if you're not going to replace his bat, what you want is confidence with defense. And that's what you get. So, you know, whether it's framing, whether it's even, we saw it in the first game in LA, you know, blocking pitches in the dirt. So no, I completely agree with you. I think what hurts over the 8 weeks is back to that point of Alvarez wasn't hitting the cover off the ball. Ironically, when the Mets were going on that winning streak, he wasn't really hitting at all. But it's like, you know that eventually that's going to come. You knew the power was going to come. So over that 8 week stretch, there was going to be a 3 week stretch where he'd get really, really hot. I'm not sure you're going to see that from either the other options. And I think that's where it really hurts them the most, because I think if they play it right, they can get by with the defense.
I think that's right. And, you know, I want to end with just one quick positive note and one quick negative note. On the negative note, Pete Crow Armstrong has made his major league debut and he hit a home run. And, you know, it's funny, JB, because for all the obsession with Jared Kelnick that Mets fans have had, that trade was very ill-conceived and really terrible in thought, but has turned out okay. I mean, Edwin Diaz, we got something back that had value. People don't really complain enough about the Pete Crow Armstrong for 2 months of Javi Baez, which just looks insane. at this point. And, you know, I don't want to just dwell on the past. I'll just note that he's made his major debut. He hit a home run. I'm going to try to just forget it, put it in the past, but just note that for all of you that are obsessed with the Kelenic deal, this one probably was actually worse. On the positive side, I do want to note there's a really great article in The Athletic. It's an interview with Adam Ottavino. And if you subscribe to The Athletic and you have access to it, you should really take a look. Ottavino just talks about how he had to reinvent himself again this offseason. He's done it many times before. And just, you know, the way he just worked on different pitches and trying to get some added velocity and different placement and stuff like that. It's a fascinating clinic on what it is to be a major league pitcher in 2024. I absolutely recommend that you read it. You know, most of our listeners know that Ottavino has been really committed to his craft for years, created a pitching lab. I believe it was in Harlem many years ago, where he developed some pitches that now are very commonplace in the game, but weren't at the time. He was a pretty good broadcaster for SNY, which was funny because he wasn't even on the Mets at that point. He was a free agent, so it was a little random. But he'd be a great pitching coach someday down the line, I think. I really recommend that article. And the positive thing about it is that he's pitching great. After a couple of shaky outings to start the season, I think he's retired, you know, 21 of his last 22 batters, something like that. So definitely want to give that a big recommendation.
Yeah, and I guess just one thing on that point is, I think that's what's fun about this Mets team is it seems like they have a nice balance between veteran, like smart veterans like Ottavino, now JD Martinez, professional hitter, and that youthful excitement. I mean, obviously Alvarez is out now, but we're talking about with Beatty. I think it's a good mix. I know you could say every team has veterans and has kids, but it's like, to me, the Mets, it's not just like veterans. It's guys that like people throughout baseball look up to. People are really smart, probably have media careers ahead of them. So I like the mix that we're seeing from this group.
Well, that's a great way. It's a hopeful note to end this episode. We don't always do that. Thank you for that, JB. Thank you for all of you out there for listening. I also want to shout out our wonderful producer, Andrew Claudio. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. And let's go Mets.